Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 13th, 2012. You're listening to the finest PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
It's kind of a solemn occasion here. In a few days, it's going to be 1 year anniversary of Black Friday.
Yeah. Not fun at all, is it?
No. But you know, we're still around, and that right there is a testament to not only our fortitude, but how strong poker is. So.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. Certainly, the world's different now, but I'm glad we're still part of it. And one of our listeners, Michael Cantor, emailed us, letting us know, of course, the Black Friday anniversary is coming up. Thanks. he was just curious about what everybody's done with their time in this past year. And he said, for some reason, he just doesn't feel like he's done much with it. He's watched a little bit more TV. He's been a little bit more productive at work, but really doesn't have anything to say. I guess how he's filled the void that's left behind by Black Friday, and I'm sure he's curious what our listeners have done. So if you guys want to share those thoughts with us, email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. But what do you think? How has this year been for you, I guess?
Well, one of the things is that the doctor bills have decreased from all the times I had to go there and have them sew up in my hand from punching a hole in the wall from getting sucked out on online. I know that my bank account has pretty much risen because I haven't lost all that money on those suck-outs. So I guess my year has changed by staying at home more. By plastering up the holes that were in the wall in my bedroom and painting them. And then, other than that, just maybe getting a little more work done. Instead of working till 3 a.m., now I can work till 1 a.m. and not have to worry about those other 2 hours playing online poker. So I've been, I don't know if it's been productive, but, I've definitely found things to do without, it's funny, too, because the other night I was just so jonesing. I'm like, is it the 6th? Is there going to be like a Papes event maybe tonight or something? Because I really feel like playing poker right now, and I don't want to drive anywhere. So I really am jonesing for it, and I just don't want to do anything until it's regulated.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for me because I haven't missed it as much as I thought I would. But what I miss about it is it's not there when I want it to be.
Exactly.
You know, it's I don't know, it's... I guess you could say taking it for granted,
yeah.
Or something like that. But it's like when we drive by, my wife and I go out to eat a lot, and when we drive by a restaurant that closed that we liked, and we're like, "Oh man, that's a shame. Never can go there again." And then we look at each other and like, "Well, yeah, we went there 3 times in the last 6 years, so it's not like we really helped it stay open." Yeah. Well, we wanted it to be there when we wanted to be there, and I think that's what it is. I'll wake up someday and I'm like, gosh, I just really feel like playing an 8-game mix sitting over $5.
Yeah.
And I can't do it anywhere, really, other than, in play money, I guess, if you wanted to. But I think I'd be lying if I said I wasn't more productive now, because I think before Black Friday I used to, play some sit and goes in the background while I was working and doing emails. And, I think I was multitasking well, but certainly I'm multitasking better when I have one task now. But I think, and this is no shock, I think, to anybody out there, I think the big thing that I miss, and I think probably a lot of the nation misses, is the camaraderie between the nation and playing. Really thank all the folks that are keeping Papes alive and doing that. And, it's a small group that still plays, and I need to get... more involved with that. But obviously it's different. And, you know, I miss the days when we would line on and have 150 fans there playing poker and just talking and from all around the world and stuff. I feel like my life is less rich because of that now.
It's funny, when Black Friday happened, you and I probably subconsciously said, well, we're going to have a ton more time on our hands now, and let's expand the magazine nationally. Because literally, as Black Friday was happening, we decided, all right, we're going to Vegas, then we're going to California, and then we're going everywhere. So we're going to need that time anyway to take care of all this. So that's literally what happened with us. When Black Friday happened, everybody shrunk and we grew.
That's a good point. I wonder, you know, had we not already been thinking about that and had the stones to do it in that rough time, how much different this year would have been, maybe, without online poker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, I guess, you know, it's like everything, you know. I mean, Black Friday last year, I lost a pet, you know, and, you know, it's that not having thing to fill the void makes it rougher, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously a month later we went out and got two new cats and filled that void, and the fact that we were doing new and exciting things for the magazine, I think, filled the void of that too. So, I mean, the longer you sit around doing nothing, thinking about what you lost, the harder it is, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was it. We kept ourselves busy, and you know, we had to fill that void somehow, not only with our time and our effort, but with our financially too, because we lost PokerStars, so... It ended up being a good thing, and I think when it comes back, we'll reap the benefits of that. So, you know, it was a bad thing then, but ultimately for the game, I think it'll be a good thing once it's regulated. So we just got to move forward, and one of the ways you can move forward is looking forward to this new poker movie called All In. It's in limited release now, and it'll have a wider distribution coming very shortly. And next week we're going to have the director on the show, mm-hmm. which is pretty exciting. And which is more exciting now, though, is tonight, or today, we're having Chris Moneymaker on the show, who actually has a very central role in this documentary. And it was really telling throughout the entire movie of just what he went through to get to where he is now. And it was really good. You and I got to see a sneak peek of it.
Yeah, it was, you know, I watched it last night, and it's funny, we're talking about Black Friday, and, you know, the movie starts off, I think, very powerfully with the filmmaker asking a bunch of people where they were when they heard about Black Friday.
Yeah.
And somebody even compared it to the Kennedy assassination. You always remember where you were.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess that's what I was thinking about when Michael emailed us about what he had too. And I think it was a real powerful way to start it out. And I'm looking forward to talking to him next week, because I know he had plans to open it right before that and had to go back and recast the whole story in essentially in light of Black Friday.
Yeah, and when you think about it too, I mean, you wonder what that original product was like, because there was no Black Friday entry or opening. So what was the opening of that movie originally? So I can't wait to talk to him about it. And I don't want to give away too much of the movie, because I want people to see it. And but one thing I'll make sure you want to see is, yes, I am in the movie!
In an uncredited role, unfortunately.
Yes, and I'm going to have to get to the bottom of that with the director as well, how I'm not mentioned in the credits.
It's because you don't have a SAG card.
That's right. I need to get myself a SAG card. I'm in this movie, baby. But it was weird. You know, you see all these people that you know in the industry, guys that you've hung out with, you know, Pokerati, Dan Michalski's in there, and he gets interviewed. And, you know, I just think about me and you hanging out with him at 1 in the morning at the Palms outside while he's smoking a cigarette. And I'm thinking, you know, this guy we're chilling with, he likes us, we like him, we talk to him on Twitter and stuff, and here he is in the movie, and all these people we've interviewed and talked to, and it's all about them and our business. And so I can forgive him for not putting my credit in there. But yeah, there's a scene in there when Phil Hellmuth comes out, and he does one of his great entrances, and it's one of the ones where I was at the feature table watching it, not in it, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's when he's at that feature table, and when he comes up and makes his entrance and everything, and the camera's on him, and I'm like right there in the bottom right-hand corner. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in the movie! So I'm going to have to get my SAG card, because these uncredited roles don't help the business at all, so need to get our name out there.
Like I said, we're going to have the director on next week, but usually when we have the director, it's tough for us to really talk about the movie ourselves. I mean, obviously, we don't have to... the show to be about him next week, but I know you mentioned to me that you thought the movie was really good, as I did, but you wondered whether it would be interesting to people who aren't interested in poker. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wondered. Just because, you know, and the other thing too is a lot of us know a lot about this movie already. You know, we'll talk to Chris a little bit about that in a few minutes, And but a lot of the stuff, though, even like some of the interviews, it sounded a lot of insider-ish stuff, and it's like we take it for granted because we understand it. And it gets back to that. What was it? Was it O'Malley who sent us in that example from his class where?
Oh yeah.
They wanted you to try to tell something with all of the verbiage that they use from your favorite hobby or whatever it was. So to me, it was a lot of that. Like, I wondered if I was a layman, if I would know what these people were talking about half time or why it's such a big deal, you know. But I felt like a poker player would really appreciate this movie and learn a lot of the history and some of the stuff that happened that, you know, there was a lot of stuff in there that I was like, wow, I didn't realize that happened or I didn't realize this was that or whatever. But yeah, I do wonder if the general public. And I wonder if the director strived for that. Did he strive for something that he thought the general public would want to embrace, or was he just wanting to tell a story? Because a lot of these documentaries, too, are just to chronicle something,
right?
Not necessarily to appeal to a large audience. So I can't wait to see what he has to say.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was going to say is, yeah, I mean, if you go to the movies expecting to see werewolves or 3D blue aliens or car crashes, you know, this is not the movie you're going to go pick to see, regardless of the subject matter. But if you are a history nerd like me that actually loves documentaries, I think there's going to be some people that are not in the poker world that are going to want to watch this just from the historical point of view of it. I mean, right now on my DVR, I'm watching a two-hour PBS special on the Amish.
Right.
It's fascinating to me, but I'm not going to, when I'm done with it, become Amish, you know.
Right.
So you know, just because people watch it, I mean, I don't harbor any illusions that they're going to run out and hey, let's play cards. But you know, I think there's going to be some people that are going to be interested in it from a historical point of view, and it certainly does have a very modern poker feel to it. I mean, it talks a little bit about the history, of course, but really, I thought it did a really good job of explaining where we've come in the last, you know, 14, 15 years.
Yeah. Some of the things that really struck me were when they throw the graphics up on the screen with some of the stats that they have, and you're just looking at it like, wow. I mean, you'll have to see the movie to get what we're talking about, but yeah. I mean, some of the stats in that movie were pretty phenomenal and shocking, and one of my favorite, and I'll probably talk about this again on the show, but one of my favorite things on the show was, or the movie was, they had an academy dealer there, one of the guys who deals.
Right.
And they're talking about why people think that, you know, gambling is bad or whatever. And he was saying, you know, hey, I feel bad when people, you know, are gambling with their money and they lose, you know, and they lose their last dollar to me. But they're adults, and I didn't make them sit there. He said, now, at what point do you take this? You know, he basically said, you know, if somebody's overweight and I'm working at McDonald's, do I not sell them a cheeseburger? If they're, you know, and it was a great point. It's like the perfect point. Hey, if you aren't good at playing poker and you stick your money in and lose, am I supposed to not take your money because you have a problem with not knowing how to play the game, you know, or whatever? And it was a great point, and that was really what hit. That one hit of all the things on the movie. That really made me feel good and made me hit home that, you know, we're not doing anything wrong here, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be, you know, able to have this stuff regulated online and to not be frowned upon anymore.
Yeah, I had a big aha moment too, and then we'll move on to the rest of the show here. But my big aha moment, I thought, was, you know, we get asked often, when did the poker boom start? What caused the poker boom? In fact, actually, I got that question like a month ago. It's funny, I'm still getting those questions.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think if you ask poker players, there are three things. Rounders coming out in 98. You know, the advent of televised poker a couple years later. And then, of course, you know, the phenomenal thing that our guest today, Chris Moneymaker, did when he won, you know, with that satellite. And online poker. So, and I think there's probably some debate over what was the biggest thing, biggest part of those three things. But there was somebody that was interviewed on there, and I thought it all tied it together to me. That he said something about how Rounders introduced the vernacular to people.
Right.
And the television exposed him to the strategy. And I think he could have gone on and say one more thing, and the internet made the game accessible.
Yeah.
So to me, I mean, it's funny that I hadn't really thought about it this way, but I think it's probably the power of the movie to kind of tie those things together and really explain how they worked in concert with each other, one after the other, to, you know, start getting people thinking about poker, really getting them interested in it, and then making it very easy for them to play it.
Yep, exactly. And that was, I think that was Koppelman, the guy who wrote Rounders.
Yeah, you're right.
And that was, that was a great moment, too. And, you know, I mean, there were some interviews in there that I watched that I was like, I don't know if I necessarily agree with what they're saying, or sometimes I'm watching it and thinking, you know, which side are we telling here? But it's definitely worth watching and definitely worth checking out. So don't forget, next week we're going to have the director on, and we're going to talk to him a little about the movie a little more in depth. But let's move on with the show.
Yeah. If folks have actually already seen the movie and you have questions for the director, you know, definitely email them to us, and we'll try to work them in next week. But the All-In movie is not the only thing I've been watching lately. And, you know, thinking of Black Friday, I go all the way back to the UIGA. And listeners of the show way back then will remember that when that heinous law was passed is when I started buying season tickets to our little Class A team, baseball team here, right?
Right.
Because I thought, you know, hey, they're going to take away all my online poker. I got to fill the void some way.
and we didn't have a magazine back then, so.
No, yeah, absolutely. So that is one of the greatest things I've ever done. I really enjoy going to the games now. So we went to our first game this week. We went to a restaurant bar beforehand, and we were watching TV, and the Masters was on, right?
Right.
And, of course, I made a joke about how I need to go out and get myself some white pants. And my wife said, yeah, absolutely, that's in your fashion wheelhouse. I'm like, thanks, honey, you're cute. But we're sitting there, and we're talking about, she's like, gosh, who watches this? This is so boring. Guys hitting the balls, and I'm like, well, I'm like, yeah, you're right, honey, but, you know, it's just like poker. I mean, the people that are into golf really find it fascinating, just like the people who are in poker find poker on TV really fascinating. And those who aren't find both of them tediously boring, I imagine, right?
Yeah.
And she said, all right, I get it. But here's the thing. He's like, she's like, those people along the rope line paid to go see this, didn't they? And I'm like, yeah, it's the Masters. It's one of the most sought-after sports tickets in the world. They paid a real pretty penny to be there. And she's like, well, no one pays to go watch poker, do they? And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's a good point. You're right. I don't think anybody has ever charged to watch poker. So, you know, I could see the little hamster wheel moving in her head. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to start charging people to come watch their home game. It's like, I'm going to get those really tall chairs so they can sit around the table and watch the action. I'll have a red velvet rope and stuff to block your eyes off, protect you from the crowds. She's like, I think I can make some money on this. What do you think?
Well, let's see. They won't pay to watch Doyle Brunson and the greatest in the game in the world vie for the most prestigious championships ever, but they're going to come watch us play 2-4 and fumble along with it as we do. Yeah. Or invite me out to your mansion when you build it.
Hey, here's the thing. She's supporting me as an entrepreneur. I got to support her, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Get those director's chairs and put them all around the table. Of course, now we're going to have to sign a waiver releasing our... they're not going to videotape it, I guess, but, you know, allowing people to watch us play and stuff. Sweating my cards for free. Oh, man.
All right, well, the hotline did not ring this week, but someone sent us an audio hand of the week. But to be honest, it's better suited for the hotline. So remind folks in the future, call the hotline, 813-448-1120. It's very easy.
I always like to take this opportunity to say that the phone did ring, actually.
That is true.
Just nothing was worthy of putting on the show, so... You know, I mean, that's the thing.
I was going to say, it's so easy to call that people are calling us and they don't even realize they're calling us. We're on about a once-a-week butt dial regimen now, I think.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I was getting our hotline confused with the old one we used to have when we were at the Times, where you had to actually push a number to get to our hotline.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how is this guy not only butt dialing, but then butt pushing the right number to get to us? And then you're like, you start laughing. You're like, no. And all they got to do is dial the number. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that makes a little more sense. But yeah, you love hearing the guy's butt rub against his gabardine walking around the house. knowing that. We're like, hey, pick up the phone. We know you just called us. And he has no idea, you know.
Yeah, I'm waiting to get some real good gossip from one of our listeners, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because I listen to this clip all the way to the end, you know, regardless, just to see if I'm going to find out whether, you know, they're plotting something. So far, it's just been people just walking their dogs.
Yeah.
At some time, one of you out there is going to butt dial us, and it's going to be really juicy, and we're going to appreciate it.
I can imagine that 911 call. Officer, I know where they buried the body. How do you know, sir? He butt dialed our hotline. And then I heard him talking about it.
All right, well, this week, Ben Scholes emailed us this, and let's go ahead and play that clip.
It's heads-up play on the final table in a $25 entry three-table pub tournament. The other guy and I, we've been locked in the heads-up battle for quite a while now. I'm trailing 18,000 chips to 22,500 chips, and the blinds are now at their maximum, 2,000 over 4,000. I look down at my hole cards to see ace of hearts, ace of diamonds. My opponent is under the gun and bets 5k on top of his small blind. Thinking he might have a rag hand, I re-raise to 9,000. My opponent snap calls, and we see a flop. Jack of diamonds, ace of spades, 5 of diamonds. Flop top set, and if I get a couple of diamonds, I'll have the nut flush. My opponent bets out 3k, which is a third of my remaining chip stack. I raise all in, figuring he'll probably make me shove anyway if he has something half decent. My opponent looks at me for a few seconds and he calls apprehensively. He shows king of diamonds, king of clubs. Even if he catches a stray king, I have this in the bag. Even two running diamonds won't save him. The turn is a ten of hearts, the worst card I could see. Even worse than a king, because it opens a straight draw. The river comes. I'm standing up, awaiting my fate. It's a queen of spades, and he makes a straight. The Black Maria cost me over $250, difference between first and second. Talk about a bad beat.
All right, well, here's why it wasn't a hand of the week. I didn't think it was just, you know, it's heads up. It's, I mean, what are you going to do? You got pocket aces.
Yeah.
You're going to get them all in. You want to be in all against kings, and you got, you know, just unlucky running runner straight. And by the way, Ben, we are going to send you some swag, but you owe Chris a dollar.
That's right. Not only did you lose that money, but you're going to lose another buck, pal. Yep. Ship it. Anybody who tells me a bad beat story has got to give me a buck. I want my buck now.
But seriously, I mean, the heads up, it's tough to analyze heads up hands as well, too. I think we've done a couple on the hand of the week, but it really comes down to your personal style and how you play heads up. I mean, the cards really, at that point, I mean, the cards really don't matter in general, but in heads up, they really matter much less. So, you know, hey, next time you'll get them.
Yep.
And when you do, you will be wearing a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear on your wrist. Pro Poker Gear sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues. They also sell hats, t-shirts, and gifts in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com, and we'll be happy to send that grinder bracelet out to Ben.
Well, people call the hotline, but we didn't use them, but people write in, and we use it. Michael wrote from Massachusetts into our mailbag this week. He says, this happened in our regular home game. Player wins a hand after the flop and says to the other player, pick a card, any card. They're both the same. So this is a common occurrence in our home game, he says. His opponent flips over the first card and is a king. He then proceeds to look at the other card, which was an ace. And then after he is caught, says something like, I just wanted to know if you were lying. This is a tournament, and the first player wanted him to sit out for at least a round for cheating. After a little discussion, we concluded it was a crappy thing to do, but no penalty had occurred. Thoughts?
Okay. Yeah, this player just opened an account at the Deutsche Bank.
the high interest, high yield account.
Yes, exactly. So there's no question about that. In fact, actually, I kind of chuckled when I wrote back to Michael that I did this myself. And I don't know if you were at this game, Chris, but a long time ago, you know, when the wives were still playing with us, before, as my wife said, you guys got all serious.
Yeah.
she was playing with us, and And she did something similar. I don't think she did that. Pick a card, any card. But I actually reached over and picked up her hand and looked at it. And it was like I ran over a baby with all four tires of my car. It was like, from right around the table. And my wife still reminds me of this to this day. It's been probably 170 years. I remember that time you grabbed my hand. I cannot believe you did that. So, yes, I was a Deutsche Bank then, too. So, absolutely a Deutsche Bank. I don't know about I really honestly don't know how you penalize somebody. I mean, in a real casino, you're not going to be touching somebody's cards. Somebody's going to do something to you, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's in the parking lot later on or the manager's right away. But this is a home game with friends, so it's a little loosey-goosey, right? I guess my advice is you learn from this, you move on, and you establish some kind of Deutsche Bank rule for the next time somebody decides to make a deposit.
Well, here's the thing, though. And tell me if I'm wrong. The first player saying pick a card, you're already opening up the door for Deutsche Bankery. I mean, first of all, to me, that's kind of a Deutsche Bank move as it is. Because you lied saying you got a pair that are the same, and you're being a wise guy. So, you know, I'm not saying what the other guy did was right. But, hey, you're telling me you can pick a card? Well, you picked them both. How are you liking that now?
Karma's a bitch.
Next time, don't show me your cards. Next time, don't be a Deutsche Bank yourself and show me the cards. You know, I mean, or tell me that I can look at them. You're putting your cards out there saying I can turn one over. I'm going to turn them both over. Sorry. No, I'm not going to. But, I mean, you know, if somebody does, you're going to have to live with the consequences. That's what you get for, one, being a wise guy, two, trying to be all cool, and three, putting your cards in front of somebody who might actually take you up on it. So, I don't know. But a penalty? This guy's not cheating. He didn't cheat. He didn't do anything. The hand's over. No penalty for me. I'm sorry. You know what? Keep your cards to yourself, muck them, otherwise you run the risk of something like this happening. You know, penalty. Show me that in Robert's Rules or the TDA where it says, I let somebody look at my cards and he took me up on it. Boo-hoo! You know, he's supposed to only look at one. Give him a round. No. Sorry, pal. Right? Am I wrong here? I don't know.
No. I totally agree with you. And you know, again, this is why, to be honest, home games are fun, I think.
Yeah.
Is that you're with friends? It's a little more casual, and you can do stuff like this. And I'm not saying it's fun that somebody exposes the cards, but I mean, it's just all part of the experience, I think, of a home game. And like I said, every home game is different. So I'm sure there's home game runners out there right now that are going, oh my gosh, that would never happen to my game. He would be banned forever. And that's perfectly fine for your home game. And I know this would never happen in our home game because I don't think anybody would ever do the, hey, pick a card in our game. But you know, it's really how you want your game to be run from here on out. But
yeah, it's one thing if you were mucking your cards and you didn't, you know, you're handing them to the dealer or something, and then the guy reached over, and that's something else. Yeah. That's, hey, you're out of the game, you're not coming back until you, not one, apologize, and two, you know, pay us all a fee or something. But, you know, when you're opening up to that, you're going to be a victim of it.
All right, Mike, we are going to send you a deck of J Design playing cards, official playing cards of Annie Up. Everybody else can pick up your own decks in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. Just be sure your friends in the home game are a little less grabby. When you bring those cards to the next home game.
We got a call to the floor this week, but we're not going to have to call across country and wake up Jody for this one.
We can handle this ourselves.
Then we can handle it ourselves. Okay, well, I'll do the first one, you do the second one. How's that sound? This comes from Mark Wittig. Says, we were in a few hands into the next level right after coloring up the green 25s. It's a home poker tournament. I raised all in and was called by a person with fewer chips. When he was counting out his chips, he had two green 25s. Are those chips in play? Should they be colored up after the hand? Should we answer now, or should we wait till you do the second one?
Yeah, we'll do them one at a time. Gonski.
See ya.
Sayonara.
I lost my chip. You're going to lose yours, because that happened to me once in a real tournament. So those get tossed, buddy. That's what you get for not putting them up in front.
Never seen it done any other way. You know, that's what they tell you before the break. Be sure you put all your green chips out before you go on break.
Yeah.
And every single time I've seen this happen, somebody comes back, oh, here, I got two more. They're like, oh, thank you. Pick them up, but where the rest?
Oh, that's where they went. Oh, thank you. Can I have those, please? Thank you very much. We were wondering why the well wasn't full. Now we've got them. Thank you. Oh, you want something for that? Too bad. No black for you.
All right, well, second example. Playing in my local bar league last night, we had an unusual incident happen. We self-deal and self-cut. My apologies already.
Yes.
I was in the big blind. The end of the gun calls. The next few players fold. The dealer call. My option. Flop comes out. I check. Under the gun bets 1,000 units. The big blind, which is the big blind amount. The dealer raises to 2,000 units. And before I get to act, someone asks the dealer, where are your cards, sir? Sometime between him calling and the flop, his cards got into the muck. We know his hand is dead, but what about his 2,000 unit bet? Does it stay in the pot? He said the gal that runs the league tells us after we could not come to a conclusion that his chips would stay in the pot. What do you think, Chris?
They're gone. See ya.
See ya. Sayonara.
Sayonara. You didn't protect your hand.
Yep.
That's like saying all of a sudden you get a really good feeling that this guy's got you beat. So you squeeze your cards into the muck so you get your money back. No, sorry. You lose that money.
Yeah, you gotta pay attention here. So now I know when I wrote back Mark, he's like, well, what if somebody just bet and didn't I forget what his example was, but there is a something about this where, you know, people could be betting without having any cards on purpose, you know, this whole collusion thing too. So that's a whole different story, I think. But in this situation, you know, hey, you're not responsible enough for your cards and you put 2,000 units in. Just be happy they're going to a better home.
Now, there's something to be said where if somebody threw 2,000 unit chips and they didn't have a hand to start, well, obviously those money doesn't go in the pot. You can't just donate money to a pot. But clearly this guy was in the hand when it started and put money in thinking he had it. That money's gone, buddy. Sorry. What a shame.
Yeah. Now, again, if you can get away with not doing self-deal, self-cut, it's going to save a lot of headaches like this.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it's tough, too. I mean, in our home game, we do it, too. And, you know, you just got to – when you're a dealer in a self-deal, you know, I'll keep saying it, you got to be 8 levels of observant at that point.
Yep.
Because you got to make sure the game's running correctly. You got to be sure you're dealing properly. And if you're playing, you got to be sure you maintain your cards and know what you're doing. And it's tough, you know. It's really kind of brutal, I think, because everybody will tell you that position's everything in poker, right?
Yeah.
And in a self-deal game, you almost lose that advantage, I think, when you're dealing.
Yeah,
you almost really have to take advantage of the cutoff seats or the hijack seats.
Yeah.
Because when you're a dealer, it's just really difficult to play, I think. Deal and play.
Especially stud. I know I'm sitting there going,
oh, gosh, yeah.
5 of spades, 8 of clubs, 9 of diamonds. I'm trying to keep track of them while I'm doing them. And then, oh, man, that's why it's good to have the dealer sit out in certain games, too. You know, because it's so important. Position is so important that if you're, you know, that's why, what is it, triple draw games, we almost always have the dealer sit out when we have enough players.
Yeah.
Because not enough cards. So it's so much easier to just do that. And then you know that you're the button after that. So,
like, actually, that's probably a good suggestion, isn't it? To get around this, it's just saying, you know, hey, if it's a self deal game, then the dealer will. We need the dealer completely 100% focused on dealing, so you will not be part of the game at that point.
Now we're thinking cash games, though, right? I mean, in a tournament, they have to play every hand. That, which is what this last example was.
Well, right? I mean, I guess if you're making it a rule ahead of time, what do you really miss? You're not skipping blinds or anything.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, that's a good idea too. Self dealt. Then you're sit out.
Self deal. Sit. It's catchy. There's something catchy there. So
yeah, we'll make it a bumper sticker when we're done.
All right, Mark, you're already swag worthy, but everybody else, remember to send us your call to floors, and we'll have Jody answer them, and we'll give you something great, like a download of the Chinese 13 card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes Store.
Well, your
and
favorite,
I love our feedback.
Yeah, it's your favorite segment.
It is, because they always seem to be picking on you.
And despite Dan England being from Colorado, I always read his emails with an English accent in my head. I can't get past the fact that he's from Colorado.
Are you going to read him with a Colorado accent?
Well, no, but I'm just saying, I just always think he's from across the pond. I don't know what it is. Whenever he writes Colorado at the end, I'm like, really? I always forget that.
This is what Dan wrote in. He said, I just listened to this week's podcast. Great as usual. Aw, thanks, Dan, but we know that. I heard, though, that you needed to change the color of your chip. So I guess next week's show will be Chip Improvement 2 by Chris, : how to make your chips a solid color using Easter egg kits.
Touche.
I love it. You're the handyman of Antio.
That's right. Well, I tell you what, there is a way we could do it. They are stickers. So, I mean, we really or later could just order 2,000 stickers for each color or whatever, how many chips we have, and sub out the stickers if we wanted to. But, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Sorry.
You know what? I was thinking about this, too. I don't know if you've seen this commercial. I don't watch a lot of commercials, obviously. I like to totally pirate my TV and fast forward through them all.
Right.
Enjoy the free goodies without actually buying any products. But I did saw this probably during the Masters when I was forced to watch commercials. new Monopoly game out. Where there's no money.
Oh.
You got like a charge card.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen that.
Right, and you get a little machine, and you stick it in there, and it debits it, or credits it, or whatever. So you can't do like what my wife always does when I go go to the little Doyle's room. She's pilfering money out of my stack. Although I guess you could probably still get around that. But you know, I wonder how close are we in a poker to not actually having chips, but just having a little card in front of us, and the dealer swipes it every time and reloads it.
Well, it's just going to be no dealer then. It's going to be that. You know, poker, pro tables, crap. So, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. Big time. I don't want to have to keep handing the dealer my card and say I raise. You know, now there'll be tells on the way you hand your card to the dealer, and oh, please, let's just have chips.
Well, maybe they'll have some kind of like little wavy thing in the middle. You know, where you just like wand.
Wand. All right, Harry Potter. How do you play poker? Oh my God. All right, let's move on to some housekeeping. as we mentioned before, we lost our good friend John Lanier to prostate cancer a while ago, and there's going to be an $80 buy-in tournament to benefit prostate cancer awareness. It'll be held 2 p.m. on April 20th at Tampa Greyhound Track, the Lucky's Poker Room. And both Scott and I will be playing, and we're going to be donating about $300 worth of raffle prizes, so it should be a good time and raise some money for a very important project. So if you can join us, please come out and hang out with us and play in this tournament. It's real reasonable.
Yeah, Mike Fasso is going to be there too as well. So
good. Very good.
It'll be a good event for a very good cause. And then the following week, we're going to be in Oklahoma.
Where the wind sweeps down on the plain. Something like that.
Wow. We could be Rodgers and Hammerstein. we're going to be at the very beautiful Choctaw Resort in Durant.
It's Durant.
Durant. Sorry. We were corrected last time.
It's Durant.
Still got it wrong. You know, it's just like Bossier City. Trying to give some alternate pronunciations. All right, now, and Durant, because the great folks there have hired Ante Up and Fallow Productions to do the live streaming of the final table of the Chad Brown Challenge. It will be on Monday, April 30th, starting at noon Central. We'll be going for as long as 10 hours, so even if you're working during the day and you have one of those jobs where the boss says, no, you can't watch poker during the day, you actually got to work, you can watch it when you get home.
Yeah, we might still be going.
Yep. And of course, tell us what you like and don't like about live streams so we can do a bang-up job. You can email us at podcast@aniamagazine.com or... participate in the conversation we have going on at the forum. And, of course, don't forget to tune in and watch us at AntiUpMagazine.com or on our Facebook page that day.
Very cool. And you know what else, too? Remember last week we talked about calling the hotline and doing your best Phil Hellmuth blow-up impression. We're going to give swag to the best one, so make sure you call 813-448-1120. You've had a week to prepare your little scripts and everything, so... get on the horn, start calling, fill up our voice box, and we'll be sure to use them on a future show.
And, of course, we've got some great meetups coming up soon. Details are trickling in. Hopefully by next week we'll have final details. But right now, Minneapolis on May 27th. We're going to start by meeting up at the St. Paul Saints game at 3 o'clock, getting the cheap seats sitting out in the bleachers. And just having some fun there, and then we'll go over to Canterbury Park and play poker some form or fashion of poker there. figure that out a little bit closer. And then 2 days later, in May 29th, we'll be in Chicago at the Horseshoe Hammond. And in the course of Vegas, the week of the 25th, we'll figure out more details on that soon and let you know. And already getting good feedback. Poker Geek MN is going to be at the Minneapolis one, as is Father Paul.
I was going to ask you that. I literally was just about to say, hey, have you heard from Father Paul about that?
Father
Very
Paul
cool.
Paul will be there. And Poker Geek says there's a lot of other people with some interest, so it could be a pretty good meetup there. And then, of course, in Chicago Joe, you know, is going to be there.
Yes.
And I imagine the Critic Art TV guy will be there. Chicago Jason said he's probably going to be there. Chicago Brian will be there. I don't know if anybody not named Chicago is planning on coming. but I imagine maybe one or two.
We haven't heard from Chicago Mike in a long time. I hung out with him in Sarasota that time. And I don't know. I think he gave up poker or something because we don't hear from him anymore.
He's emailed us some news tips. But,
has he?
But yeah. Well, maybe he'll be out there as well too. So.
Hoping he's getting there. And we're going to have another cruise, you know, at least two more this year. Be sure to check out our 2012 poker cruise schedule at annieupmagazine.com/cruise. Next one is August 27th out of Port Canaveral. There are some giveaways still planned at Suncoast in Las Vegas. And then November 10th out of Baltimore. To watch Scott drive a 16-foot truck cross-country.
It's a lot of fun, trust me.
All right, let's see the stories that are on our Annie Up news desk.
Poker Players Alliance has launched a new letter-writing campaign to Congress, encouraging its members and all poker players anywhere to write their representatives, urging federal regulation of online poker.
You know what really burns my toast? Is that we have to do this. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm fine doing it. Yes, the Americans should stand up for their rights and write their leaders and everything. But, you know, if we had enough money, you know, we had enough lobbyists doing the right thing, we'd already have this. And that's what I hate about Congress. And I hate lobbyists and all that crap. And we get kicked to the curb while there's carve-outs for thoroughbred racing and everything else. And we got to keep doing this writing letter campaign crap. And it just ticks me off. I'm tired of it.
I hate this democracy stuff.
Let's just get it done. Yeah, it's democracy, all right. You got enough money, you get what you want, right? That's democracy.
No, here's the thing. I totally agree with you. I don't disagree in any form or fashion. But last week I did get to see Shawshank Redemption again. And I will remind you that our good friend Andy Dufresne asked the warden, you know, hey, can I write a letter to the legislator asking for funds? And he laughed at him.
Yeah.
But said, you write it, I'll put the stamp on it. And he did, and after 5,000 letters...
In 15 years. Yeah. Right? Okay, so I'll see you around, 2027?
It's a slow process, but that doesn't mean we should stop doing it.
No, I never said stop. I'm going to do what I said. But it just ticks me off that we got to do this when, you know, big casino money out there can get whatever they want. Whatever. Okay. Delaware Governor... Jack Markell's administration has outlined a plan to reduce annual licensing fees for the state's brick-and-mortar casinos to help them better compete with neighboring states, and replacing that lost revenue by establishing an e-gaming system in the state.
See? Here's somebody that gets it.
Yep.
Here's somebody that says, I need to represent my state with vigor, make sure my industries can compete, and... also make sure that I can give our citizens the money that they deserve. So, you know, hey, the casinos need some help. We'll cut the licensing fees, tell them they have to put it into marketing and capital improvements so they can make their products better. And at the same time, we're going to give them something they don't have so we can still keep building roads and putting cops on the street. It's awesome. Why can't everybody that represents us be as commonsensical as the great Governor Markell here? How hard is that?
I think that leads us to our next item.
maybe. All right, and finally, it's not enough, Chris. No. It's not enough for Utah Governor Gary Herbert to sign a law opting his state out of any future federal online poker regulation. No. Now he's writing congressional leaders, urging them to stay out of the issue and leave online gaming to the states.
Yeah, another person who doesn't get it. Oh, man. Really?
Not even on Mars. He's way out on Uranus.
Take care of your own state, pal.
Yeah, you know, this is what I was going to say. I mean, give me the red ass here, reading this news.
Red ass.
And here's what I gotta say. Governor Herbert, if you want to tell Scott Long what he needs to do, here's what you need to do. You need to become governor of Florida, or a United States senator, congressman, or president. At that point, fine. You can say something. Right now, stay the hell out of my life. You got a state to run. You run your state.
If he wants to tell me what to do, he's going to have to put on a blonde wig and call himself Phyllis.
But it's just the audacity of people like this.
Yeah.
I mean, every law that has been introduced for online poker regulation has included a clause for states to opt out if they don't want to be part of it. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that the one that actually gets passed in 2027 after our letter writing campaigns will still have that in there, but it's a pretty good bet. So right now, there's nothing that this guy has to worry about. He's rammed this law through his state. He's got his people to approve it. That's great. That's fine. That's his state. I'm not going to tell him how to run his state. But don't tell me how to run my state.
That's right.
It's just crazy, isn't it?
Well, he's actually telling us how to run the country.
Well, that's true.
You know, what I mean, he's not even telling, because he's saying let the states do what they want, but he's saying don't do anything for the country. Oh man,
I'm pretty sure that Thomas Jefferson, one of the great states' rights guys, is going, "What the hell? Do I gotta undig myself from my grave and kick your ass? Because I will."
Yeah, that's what Thomas Jefferson's doing.
I'm pretty sure
he's paying attention to the online poker decisions of Utah.
Absolutely insane.
Oh, you know, man.
I wanted to go see Salt Lake City, but it ain't going to happen now.
Sorry. Talk about both ends of the spectrum here between governors. Oh, my God. Well, it's been a while since we actually got to wrap up on O'Malley's move, so I'm very excited. Let's revisit part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 1-2 no-limit hold'em casino cash game. At this table, the action comes in waves. It's pretty timid, with very little raising pre-flop, but if someone gets sucked out on, it can turn hyper-aggressive in an instant. We bought in for 100 and are down to 70. We're the short stack at the table. We're in the cutoff, and the table is nine-handed. Under the gun, the big stack with more than 600 and a victim of a recent suckout calls. The plus one folds, MP1 folds, MP2 calls. He's an older gentleman who plays fairly straightforward. MP3 folds, and we look down at the king of clubs, queen of diamonds. We're going to see a flop here, but we're also going to formulate a little plan. We're pushing hard if we get two pair or better. Otherwise, we're not going to get too excited if we flop top pair. The button calls, the small blind calls, and the big blind checks. The pot is $12, and the flop comes down, king of hearts, queen of spades, eight of hearts. The blinds check, the under the gun bets $10 into the $12 pot, and the MP calls. It's now to us. Are we sticking to our plan?
You betcha, Sarah Perlin.
Sarah Perlin? Who is Sarah Perlin?
Sarah Perlin?
You've been murdered a lot of words today, buddy.
It's early, man. You know, I got up before Chris Moneymaker
today. Oh, man, Sarah Perlin. She might have had a chance to win the office if her name was Sarah Perlin.
I'm going to get the cadence now. You betcha, Sarah Palin. Alright, here's the thing. What about this flop should give us any pause at all about our solid pre-flop plan?
Exactly.
We had a solid pre-flop plan, right? We said, hey, we're going to get frisky here, but we're only going to continue to be frisky if we hit this hard with two pair or better, right? That's what he said, right?
Yeah, that's what he said.
And what did we hit? Let me look. Yeah, it's two pair. You know, I'm not saying that once you commit to something, you can't reassess with more information, but this is our plan, right?
I think he's channeling Columbo and being intentionally obtuse or controversial or something, because, you know, obviously we're sticking to our plan. A raise here is pertinent to me because of the draws. There are a lot of draws here. Hands like
you gotta make them pay to get there.
Yeah, hands absolutely. Like Jack 10 and two hearts. I mean, those are hands that you gotta make pay. And I wouldn't mind taking the pot right here. It increases our stack almost 50% with no other action. If we just bet and took it here, it's a pretty significant increase. So I say raise or shove.
You betcha.
You betcha. Okay, let's see what happens.
Hello again. What did we decide? We're only losing to a set, and we don't want draws to get there. There's now $32 in the pot, and a proper raise would be for a good portion of our stack. So we shove. We make it $68 to go. The button and the blinds fold. The under-the-gun calls, as does the MP, which probably wouldn't be a good sign, except that they check the turn and river, which comes up the 8 of diamonds, and the 4 of clubs. The under-the-gun turns over ace of hearts, 3 of hearts, and the MP turns over jack of clubs, 10 of diamonds. We dodged a myriad of outs, and we've more than tripled up. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you just gotta get it in there. I'll see you on the film.
I know we're supposed to have final thoughts here, but yeah,
all right.
Yay!
Yay!
You know, there was much mystery here for me. I'm not sure what else we could have done. You know, but here's the thing. I mean, he faded all those outs. I think O'Malley has used up his one time quota. I know he didn't say it there, but it was implicit that he needed it, right? So
yeah,
that's gone. He has to take that off his arsenal. Unless he rolls a 7 in Dungeons and Dragons and gets a new one.
I thought it was interesting, too. I mean, that's exactly what we said was the two types of hands you want to make pay are exactly the two hands that were out there.
Yeah.
But, hey, a plan's a plan. I'm glad we stuck to it, and we're better off for it. So no real mystery here, but certainly the play correctly. I mean, I couldn't do anything else there. There's no way. So good job, O'Malley, for being Captain Obvious this week.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Ante Up.
Chris, I'm not really sure how this happened, but we've been doing the show every week for, like, what, 7 years now?
Yeah, 7 years.
And today's the first time we've ever had Chris Moneymaker as a guest. Obviously, he needs no introduction to our listeners, but we'll give him one anyhow. You know, he's, of course, the accountant from Tennessee with the perfect name, who turned $40 into $2.5 million when he won the 2003 World Series of Poker main event and helped fuel the modern-day poker boom in the process. Since then, he's kept busy with a number of other projects since then, which we'll talk about today. And we're happy that he's not too busy to spend some time with Annie up today. Thanks for joining us, Chris. We know you had a late night last night.
Yeah, up a little bit late, but you know, it is 11 o'clock, so it should be all right.
You might be the only poker player in the world that says that 11 o'clock's all right.
Well, when you have three kids at home and you wake up at 7 a.m. every single day, 11 a.m. looks like a dream.
All right, Chris, this will be your 10th World Series, a whole decade. It's amazing to even think it's been that long since you won it all. Nothing could ever prepare someone for what you experienced, but how do you think you've handled the pressure of being the guy who most people say started the poker boom?
Considering where I was in 2003 and how I felt about public speaking and being sort of in the limelight, I think I've done a really good job as far as that goes. That honestly, that was my biggest fear coming out of college, was getting up in front of people and doing speaking. I just couldn't do it. So that was my biggest fear, and that was my biggest problem with winning the main event. Once I got over that, as far as everything else goes. I mean, I just try to be nice to people, try to just be honest, you know, about all you can do. And, you know, I think I've done all right. I don't know.
You know, every poker player, it seems, wants to be world champion, but few really understand what that really means. What's been the most difficult part for you?
Well, for the public speaking, probably was the most difficult to get over. I mean, the day after I won, they told me I was going on David Letterman. I told them there's no way. it's not going to happen. I had sweat getting on stage to do that. So that was definitely the toughest part for me. But everything else has been, overall pretty easy.
Was there ever a time when you wished that Sammy Farr had called that bluff of the century and you could have faded back into obscurity as the guy who almost won rather than being the guy who's been in the attention for 10 years straight now?
Why in the world would I ever wish that? No. I ain't blown my life. I definitely enjoy a lot, and I can't wait to win the damn thing again.
Okay, well, we talked about the drawbacks, but obviously winning and being world champion is pretty amazing. What's been the best part of the ride for you?
Experiences I get to have, meeting the celebrities I get to meet, playing in some of the games I get to play, and going to the places in the world that I get to go. I mean, you know, not many people get to go to Monte Carlo and Asia to see all these unique places, and I get to do it playing a game that I love. And then, you know, meeting people like Ben Affleck, Leonardo DiCaprio, Nelly, just, you know, being able to hang out with them, and, you know, it's just a surreal experience. It's something that, you know, most people just don't have the opportunity. It's just one of the little perks you get for winning the main event.
Yeah.
Well, the World Series has obviously changed quite a bit since you won it back in 2003, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But do you ever get back to play at Binion's where you won it all?
I actually went back to Binion's, and the last time I was there, I actually had a really, really good night. I won like $110,000 from the owner.
Wow.
like 2005, I think it was, maybe 2004. He came in, wanted to play anybody in there, heads up, for $10,000. And we ended up playing the whole night, just $10,000. We actually moved it to $20,000 freeze out. So that was my last experience in business. I miss it. I thought it was a cool atmosphere.
Yeah. You've appeared in plenty of ads and stories in our magazine, representing just tons of products from Poker Stars and Blue Shark Optics, so even like an investment company and a charity event and a casino. How busy do these endorsements keep you?
I mean, they probably take up the majority of my time. I probably do more time doing investment or endorsement type opportunities than I do. Between charities and endorsements, I spend more time doing that than actually playing poker nowadays. I enjoy it. It's something that you work for, but, you know, the money, it's sort of, you know, I just want to be a professional poker player. That's why I stayed in my job for 8 months.
Right.
I always like the steady income, the guaranteed income. Being a professional poker player is a great thing. But the stress of having to go out and kill what you eat just doesn't appeal to me as much as, you know, what I can make money, working for, doing some things, just endorsing things.
Well, you'll be at the Daytona Beach Country Club next month for the Deep Stack Charity Classic, an event that Annie Up's been proud to be associated with, and it's really blossomed into one of the biggest charity tournaments around. You mentioned you spend a lot of time with charities. What has that always been important from the time you won to be involved in charities?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to give back. I always try to help charities whenever I can. I'm obviously very blessed with my life, and I've had very good success, and it's always nice to give back. And I try to do charities. You know, whenever I get phone calls to do charities, I always try to tell them yes. I hardly ever try to tell them no. And usually if it's just, you know, as simple as just signing some autographs or something, I always try to get it done for them.
Oh, well, speaking of autographs, you know, one of our favorite poker room managers is Christine Stacy at the Presque Isle in Erie, Pennsylvania. And you've done a number of events in that room. In fact, I think you're doing one, what, tonight? Is that right?
I'm actually up here. That's where I was last night till 4 a.m. Yeah, we have a tournament this evening.
Tell us a little bit about that relationship and how that got started.
Well, my the guy that helps represent me is out of Cleveland, and he came over to Erie and listened to her here. And, I mean, she's, as you know, amazing. Probably one of the best poker rooms, if not the best poker room manager in the country. Erie was really fortunate to get her. She runs a really great room. You know, up here in Erie, it's a small room. They had 9 tables, but it's incredible. During midweek, like the night before I came in, they had 8 tables running. In Erie, Pennsylvania, is pretty phenomenal. It's a really nice room. It's got it really spaced out really well. They don't have the rooms, the tables all bunched together, so you don't feel like you're on top of each other playing. The dealers are good. Service is good. So I really enjoy the room. And you know, I come up there every other month, and we have different tournaments, whether it be a $2,500 sit-and-go to $65 tournaments. We have just a different range of stuff. Last night we were playing 2-5 and 5-10 PLO. We just have different, you know, a lot of different games, and we have a good time when I come in.
Very cool.
Well, we got a sneak peek this week at All In, the poker movie, which is told in documentary form and uses your story as its guide and foundation. Over how long of a period did all those interviews take that were part of that movie for you?
Well, the first interview was probably 2005, 2006 time frame. You know, and back in that time, to be honest, there were probably 3 or 4 documentaries that came up in the post about doing interviews with me, and I told them all yes. And I think they were probably like the last one to ask. And by that time, I was like, yeah, you can come on. I mean, honestly, I never thought a movie would be made, so I really didn't think much about it. And then they were done with the movie, and they actually asked me to come out for the premiere pre-Black Friday. And the Office of Black Friday happened, they wanted to include that in the movie. So they did one more interview out in Vegas, just sort of touching on that subject. And they actually made a movie out of it. So I got to see it last week, and I was actually pretty impressed. I thought they did a really good job.
One of the things that struck me was a lot of the spots in the movie where you're in, where they're talking to you, you talk about, you know, how much of a degenerate gambler you were during that run and just before that run and even, you know, through college and everything. You've probably told those depressing stories so many times. Why do you think that was important to this story, you know, since it was basically just chronicling poker? And do you get tired of people asking you about that?
No, I don't get tired at all. I don't think it's really a depressing story. It's made me who I was. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I was glad I went through that stuff just for the simple fact that I know what it's like to be broke. I know what it's like to eat ramen noodles. So after I won the main event, I knew I didn't ever want to go back to that. I knew, you know, I knew both sides of the tracks. And I don't think if I had some of those, you know, you hear all these lottery winners, they go broke after 2 years. After what I had been through with my sports gambling, I knew I wasn't going down that road again. And that it just sort of helped me fight off any kind of demons I would have, because now I had all this money. You know, the reason I bet was to get money, and I already had the money, so there's no reason to bet anymore.
Right.
And so I don't think it's depressing at all. You know, other people might look at it and think it's really sad or whatever, but what I was is who I was, what I did. I lived, eat, and breathed betting on sports for probably 4 years. I almost dropped out of school. I went from like almost a 4.0 student down to a 0.96 student during that time.
Wow.
It just sort of took over my life, and you know, it's not something that I'd ever want to go back to. I'm glad that it's in my past, but I did learn a lot from it.
We'll be interviewing. Go ahead.
I think it's an integral part of the movie. To be honest, I didn't know what the movie was about when they interviewed me 5 years ago. When they put that, you know, they put that story in there, I think my story was sort of just a tagline. As far as, you know, the history of poker, and, you know, they used me as running through, and that's just the interview they got. So I think they were happy with that side of it. I don't know why they chose to put all the sports stuff in there, but I think at the end of the day, it came out pretty well.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be interviewing the director next week and asking him some of these questions as well, too, and don't want to give too much away from the movie. We talked a little bit about your reactions to it. I mean, in terms of how accurately it explains the poker world, do you think it did a good job?
I think he did a great job. I mean, you know, when I can sit down and watch a poker documentary and actually learn something, that's pretty incredible. You know, I don't try. I mean, I'm not, you know, out in Vegas and in the know as far as, you know, knowing what's going on in the poker. But as far as the history of poker and just poker in general, I was pretty well informed. I thought I'd sort of knew most things. But, you know, I picked up stuff throughout the movie, so I thought that was really cool that I actually learned some things throughout the movie.
Well, you know, you also brought up Black Friday and how they sort of re-edited the movie to get that all included, and then even some of the fallout after that as well. So this week, obviously this upcoming week, marks 1 year since Black Friday, and you're still a representative for PokerStars. Can you see any scenario where PokerStars will come back in the U.S.?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah?
I mean, online poker will be back in the U.S. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I mean, there's just too much money to be made, and, you know, it will get back in. PokerStars, given the fact how they handle things, I believe there's a good chance that they will get back in. You know, it's sort of a wait and see type thing, but I have 100% belief that there will be online poker, and I have a very strong belief that PokerStars will be part of that landscape.
Cool.
How much travel are you doing outside the United States for Stars now? And when you're outside of the United States, what's the reaction from people who live in the countries that you're in about what's going on here in the United States?
Well, it's more or less dumbfoundedness. I mean, you know, we live in the land of the free, and we can't play online poker. It's sort of asinine, but whatever. I traveled for the PCA. For example, this year, I traveled for the PCA this year, and I'm going to Monte Carlo next week. But I won't leave the country again until probably August, September time frame to go to London and to meet PTs over there. But, you know, this year is a little bit slower. Last year, I spent a lot of time in Europe in the fall. I did a worldwide tour, if you will. I went from Australia to Ireland to Croatia, and I did about 6 weeks straight on the road, which is the most I've ever done. And it was a good experience, but something I probably won't do again. I'll probably take the space and out a little bit more. Just being gone from the family for that long was pretty difficult.
All right, well, speaking of traveling, let's look to the World Series. How surprised were you with the overall numbers last year, given Black Friday? And then what do you expect this year?
I actually thought there would be an uptick in numbers last year. I figured that people couldn't play online, so they wanted to play live. So they would come out in droves to Vegas to play in the World Series of Poker. So I wasn't really that surprised. I think this year you'll see a little bit of a number drop.
Okay.
Just people have started doing other things, you know. Younger kids have maybe gone back to school. Just, you know, things are a little bit different. I still think the numbers will be solid. I think the numbers will be strong, but I think they'll drop off a little bit. Once it does get regulated in the U.S., though, I mean, we'll be talking 12,000 players in the main event. It'll be stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we mentioned earlier in the show, the World Series has gone through massive transformation since you won. What stands out to you as the best of the changes and the worst of the changes?
Well, the best changes, the one that worst accepted is when I won the World Series from three, I got a check and they said, you better get that thing to the bank because it may not clear. And the check not clearing. So that was definitely a tough thing. You know, Harris has taken it over and they've done a real good job as far as helping out the players and sort of bringing it into the current day. You know, back in the day, it was stuck on the names were all written on a chalkboard. You know, it was just really wasn't run that well. It wasn't bad, it didn't run that well. But the difference is, I mean, one thing I missed is back then it was, it just wasn't as commercialized now. You know, now it's, you go in, it's all cameras and fanfare and people dressing up in stupid outfits, where back then it was just poker. It was poker. It was pure, you know, poker. It was just nothing there but people trying to make a living playing the game or have fun playing the game in one of the best atmospheres in the world. And having the tournament at Binion's, there's nothing like it. There's something about that place. It's really unique, and it'll never be back to those days, obviously, but it was a special time, and I'm glad I got to be a part of it, even though it was at the very end. I don't like how commercialized it's got, but, it had to happen that way just because poker is such a a thing that, you know, it makes sense to grow and to come out to where it's been.
How many events will you play this year, and is there one in particular that stands out for you?
I plan on playing 3 or 4. That's my usual allotment. The other thing I don't like about Series did, back when they had it in either March or April, now they have it smack dab middle of summer, and I can't remember. When the kids are out of school, hey, honey, I'm going to go to move to Vegas for a month. It just doesn't that way. So I usually go out and play 3 or 4 events. My daughter's birthday falls right in the smack dab middle of it. And the thing that sticks out to me the most after looking at the schedule quickly is the Heads Up No Limit /Potland Omaha. I think the 3K event the first week. That looks like it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Wow.
I love Heads Up, and especially, you know, you get a mix of those games. That'll be my most exciting event for the point.
Cool.
All right, Chris, we know you've been up late and a little bit tired, and we appreciate you joining us. Do you got a few more minutes to stick around to help us with our hand of the week?
Sure, why not? That's one more hand.
All right, this week's hand comes from Dr. Frank Toscano. Our listeners know him well as our health columnist here at Annie Up, and he was on our recent poker cruise, Chris.
Uh-huh.
And this is a hand that that came from that cruise. Chris Moneymaker, have you ever been on a poker cruise?
Yeah, actually, I represent Carnival Cruise Lines, poker carnival, their cruise line tournament. So I go on cruises once a year to represent them and to play with all the cruisers. It's fun.
Excellent. All right, well, this hand came from a $1, $3 no-limit hold'em cash game. And our hero describes villain number one in this hand as someone that they've only gone around one revolution, and he had already lost a $200 buy-in because of a loose all-in call. He rebought for $100 and had won a few pots, so he was about $140 behind. He was in early position and limped for $3. Had another limper. And then the hijack limped as well, too. The hijack player, our hero said, he had played with him a lot on this cruise, and he was a solid, tight, occasionally brutal player who was not afraid to move his chips. And he was the one that won the all-in from villain number one and now had the big stack. The cutoff limped as well, too. The button folded, and now our hero is in the small blind. He's got $180 in the stack and looks down at the deuce of diamonds and the tray of diamonds. $16 the pot. It's $2 for him to call. What do we think he should do?
Well, if I'm playing in a 5-10 or bigger game, my cards are going in the muck. The players are going to be better. I just don't think there's a whole lot of value in trying to play a 2-3 in the small blind. But playing in a 1-3 game where you're going to outplay the people post-flop and really sort of know where you are. But, you know, I generalize 1-3 and 2-5 are generally the same type game, the same type of opponents. And I personally like to play tons of flops and get to a lot of pots with these guys and look for edges to where I know that, you know, I can take the advantage. I just know where I am a lot more. In the 5-10 game and up, you know, the game's a little bit tougher. You don't want to take a hand like 2-3 out of position against the full table. First of all, you would never, in a 5, that's the difference between a 5-10 and a 1-3. 5-10, you would never see it limped around to you to be able to put it in 2 bucks. 5-10 going to the 8 somewhere. That's just the difference between the games. I would take a flop here.
All right, well, that's exactly what our hero did. Blind, let's see, I'm sorry, I lost my hand of place here. the big blind checks behind too, so we have 6 players to the flop. $17 in the pot. The flop comes deuce, tray, 6 with 2 hearts. Obviously, we're first to act with bottom 2 pair. What do we do in a pot with 170 people in it?
Well, you got 2 options, obviously. You can lead out or you can check raise. Three people around you more than likely have the best hand at this point. You can sort of lead out and get a feel. And 5-10 game, I don't really get out. I don't lead out to try to get feels for where I am because people are tricky and, you know, can raise you with air, float you with air. But when you play a 1-3 and 2-5, there's not many people floating you with air, and there's not too many people coming over the top of you, especially like a deuce to a 6-4. trying to be tricky. They either have something or they don't. So I think, you know, in a game like that, it's usually pretty safe to sort of put out a feel of that and sort of see where you are. And a lot of times, you know, especially in the games like that, if you get check raised, and everybody's, you know, it happens so often, if you ever get check raised, you know the guys have monsters. They're reading out actually disguises the strength of your hand a little bit better, I think. So I'll probably lead out, and you know, 16 bucks a pop, I'll probably lead out. You know, I don't like bottom two pair as much because you can get counterfeited, but, you know, I'll lead out for something around the $10 range probably.
All right. Our hero decides to bet 14, so he kind of took your advice, bet a little bit more than you would have. He says, even though it was an unraised multi-way pot and a wet board, he wanted to see quickly where I stood and drive out the draws. If someone hit the board hard, I want him to play back at me now. I would have been happy to take it down right then. Villain number one calls. The next person folds. Villain number two raises to $45. The cutoff folds, $90 in the pot, and it's back to us, $31 to call. What do we do now?
Villain number one was the tie game that lost the chips. Villain number two is the tougher, more aggressive player.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you got to start putting people on ranges at this point. You know, someone could definitely have a 4-5. That's a possibility. I wouldn't think the guy... If villain number one has a 4-5, I would expect him to raise with a 4-5 in this spot more times than not. So you can probably take away any sets from him. More than likely, he's on some kind of... He probably has a flush draw, is what I would put. Or he could have something like a 6-7, you know, 5-6 type hand. You flop top pair with maybe a straight draw in there. So you're probably ahead of him almost 90% of the time, I would say. And the guy that raises, he could definitely, you know, flop the set, but you have two of the set cards that out there. It's more than likely he could have something like a pair of fours, a pair of fives, maybe wants to see a free turn, try to even fill a straight. Or he could have a pair, you know, sevens to nines, maybe seven to tens, maybe. If he had tens or better, I would expect him to raise pretty flop, so probably sevens to nines. It's probably what he is. So at this point, you know, I think I've more than likely got the best, there's a good chance I've got the best hand. But at the same time, the guy, villain number one, is never going to fold a flush draw. And if the guy does have an overpair, you could probably get him to fold. But I'm not really worried about the guy with the overpair so much, just because you do have him in such bad shape with your two pair. I'm probably going to peel the card on the flop and just try to fade a heart or whatever the suit was, and I fade a six. And if I could say the board clearing up and counterfeiting me or the flush draw getting there, then I'll probably just go ahead and get it in on the turn, thinking I had the best hand. But it's one of those other two cards. If the six comes or the flush comes, I'm probably just going to go ahead and just check out the hand at that point. So I'm going to call it $31.
Excellent. All right. Well, our hero says a few hours earlier he had heard our onboard professional Lee Childs say that when you go into a pot with suited connectors and hit two pair, you should go for it. But he said after thinking for a while, I decided to let it go. He's going to let us know what the other hands were here in a moment. But he said after the hand was over, the cutoff and the hijack both said I was playing much too tight. They said they would have called with two pair. How could you lay that down? They asked him. And he says, here's why he folded. Even though I hit my two pair, there were at least six hands that beat me right now. Deuce, six tray, although unlikely. Had me drawing only two outs. 5-4 had me drawing to four outs. And tray had me drawing dead. Even if I was ahead, there could be a flush and straight draws out there, especially in a limp multi-way pot. Even overpairs could counterfeit my babies. And there still was loose villain number one to act after me. Said he remembered T.J. Cloutier's advice from those last cruise that second two pair lost more money than any other hand, so I let them go. I said, villain number one called the raise, another heart hit the turn, villain one shoved, villain two called, a black eight hit the river, villain one flipped up the queen of hearts, ten of hearts for a flush on the turn, villain two had two red eights for a set and busted flush draw. Says, I was ahead after the flop, but would have come in third by the river.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it can't be results oriented. I mean, if you would have, if you play it my way, you know, you fold on the turn, you lost 31 more bucks. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, if you're playing and you're worried about, if you're playing any kind of poker game, and you're worried about getting beat, I mean, especially the guys got monsters in the bed syndrome. He thinks that every hand's going to beat him. I don't mind making big folds, and I definitely do make big folds. But in this spot and with these hands in a 1-3 game, you can't be really worried about losing $200. But you're going to give the best chance you can to try to get there. If the turn card comes anything other than a heart, I think that you go ahead and stick it in. And more times than not, you're going to get the guy with the flush draw going to 9 outs. One time, you know, he's going to have 18% chance to win, and he's going to probably put the rest of his money in. And, you know, so you got to like that situation if you have your two pair. And the other guy, with your pair of eights, is probably going to fold when you shove on the turn. So he's probably going to be gone, but you want him to call anyways, because, you know, he really only has, you know, about 4 or 5 outs as well. So at the end of the day, I think the correct play in given the situation was to see the turn and make. Because you have a very good idea that the first guy has a flush draw. That's, you know, it's hard for him to have anything that beats you at this point, just flat calling there. You know, the other guy's definitely a concern, but there's so many other hands that he has that you're ahead of. You just can't be afraid of losing $200. I mean, you just got, sometimes you just got to put your money in, and sometimes you turn the worst hand and lose. It's part of it. You just rebuy and go at it again.
All right, Chris. Hey, we appreciate that greatly. Great advice, and we appreciate you being on the show today, telling us everything that's going on. We want to thank Dr. Frank for sending the hand of the week to us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we are going to send him a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. Chris, we'll let you go, but tell us what's coming up for you here.
Well, obviously, I'm in Erie, Pennsylvania tonight at Prescott Downs. I got a tournament tonight, and then I go home for a week, and then I'll head to Monte Carlo at the end of the month for the EPT tournament. Next month, I go down, like you said, to Daytona for the charity event. I've got another appearance sometime in May. And then, you know, World Series starts kicking off, and I got to figure out what tournaments I'm going to play. Get out there. I'm actually taking a vacation the week before the World Series starts, so it'll be a nice little week off before going out there and playing a few events.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it, and best of luck to you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you in May. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hey, Chris.
What's going on?
It's the Scott from Annie Up.
What's going on? What's up?
Not much. Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just trying to wake up. Long night last night.
Well, with me is my partner, Chris Cosenza.
Hey, man.
What's up, Chris?
How's it going?
What's your name? A little tired.
Yeah.
4 a.m. was a little bit early this morning.
Oh, man.
Oh, gosh.